welcome to Souls on Fire with your host, Joe Trainer. Joe is a husband and father of three, and for 29 years was an award-winning and very successful college football coach. Today, he is the director of athletics for Pope John Paul II High School. He is a leader, a man of character, and filled with the joy of the Lord. Joe was running for God's heart and became a soul on fire. Listen in every Monday as Joe interviews other sports figures and businessmen and women who bring their faith into the marketplace. And now, here's Joe Trainer.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Souls on Fire. I'm your host, Joe Trainer. It's going to be a special hour for me personally. I have a dear friend of mine on with us today. He's the athletic director up at Wesleyan University in Connecticut. He's been a huge influence in my life, and this is something going to just have a great hour here with him, and he'll give us great insight, not just on his spiritual journey, but on being a disciple of Christ and how he brings that spirituality component to his workplace. And he really, more, as much as any friend I have, he's a guy that truly lives his faith. So before we get started with Mike Whalen, let us say a quick prayer here, as we always do at the beginning of every program. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen. Heavenly Father, as Mike and I gather here for the next hour of faith and fellowship, we ask that our thoughts be your thoughts, that our words be your words, and when we leave here today, that our deeds be your deeds. We ask this in your name, amen. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen. Michael, how are you, my friend?
Doing great, Joe. How are you?
Amazing. Amazing. This is a special program for me because as I was, you know, I've been stalking Mike to come on the program a couple months ago, and you know, he's obviously his schedules as an athletic director at the college level. How many sports do you guys have, Mike?
We have 30 sports, Joe.
30 sports. So imagine being the overseer of 30 sports, men's and women's. Great, so many great programs. They just won their second national championship in women's tennis. 2 years ago, they won the men's lacrosse national championship. So it's, we'll talk about Wesleyan and throughout the show. But one of those schools that, and I've always respected those places, that it's one of the premier academic schools in the country, top 20 program, top 20 reputation, U.S. World News Report, you know, just a phenomenal school academically. And they match that same type of reputation for their academics with their athletic program. So, Mike Whalen and I had the opportunity to work with Mike. Seems like yesterday, but it was coming up on 25 years ago at Colgate University, where we both joined Ed Sweeney, one of our dear friends. God rest his soul. Mike spent he's been in college athletics for the last 36 years. He's been at Wesleyan for the last 10, correct, Mike?
Yeah, actually, just finished number 11.
Okay, awesome. So his wife, you know, finally knocked some sense into him and said, enough of this coaching stuff. We're going to have a better quality of life with you as an administrator. So I'm sure it's different problems, and in a lot of ways, it's probably a much greater challenge to oversee 30 intercollegiate NCAA programs. I'm sure he may miss some of the coaching aspect, but like coaches who have done it for a long time, he's had his share of purgatory. So Mike was a two-sport All-American at his alma mater, Wesleyan University. He was an All-American wrestler and an All-American football player. And then from there, went to Springfield College as a football coach, Lafayette College. From there, he went to Colgate University, where he and I had the opportunity to work. He was the offensive coordinator, offensive line, assistant head coach there. And then from there, he got his first head coaching job at Williams College as the head wrestling coach, assistant football coach. From there, he ended up taken over the Williams football program for 6 years, where they had a record of 38-10, which is unbelievable, and then finished an undefeated season in his sixth season at 8-0 in 2006. And then the alma mater started calling, and he certainly couldn't, as much as he enjoyed his time at Williams, he certainly couldn't say no to the alma mater. So he went back there as the head football coach, assistant director of athletics, and then in 2012, he's overseeing the entire athletic program. And just, I, ladies and gentlemen, he's the second most, I'm going to argue that he's the most famous alum, but he would probably say it's probably Coach Belichick. We'll have a chance to talk about him at the end of the program. But, Mike, super excited to have you on the show, brother.
Thanks, Joe. Really appreciate it.
Awesome.
Really appreciate it. And you know, I think it's a great thing you're doing, and you know, happy to share some thoughts and ideas from my own personal situation.
Awesome. As I was reflecting back, Mike, particularly in the last week, once we kind of firmed up a date, you know, and I one of the things I constantly harp on this program is, you know, having mentors, particularly males, because you know, the mixed messages in society, what authentic manhood looks like. And I don't know if I ever really told you this, Mike, but you had a profound impact on my faith, because I was a 24-year-old, you know, knucklehead whose faith didn't, you know, whose actions didn't always marry up and weren't always in harmony with my faith. And, you know, and seeing you and, you know, Karen kind of, you know, not necessarily newlyweds, you were married a couple of years at that point, but seeing you guys, you know, every Sunday practice your faith and you making that commitment to, you know, being a Catholic husband and then eventually a Catholic father of two great boys, like that had a huge impact on me, because, you know, like when you're in those early 20s, you know, you're kind of, you get caught up in your self-indulgence and you think it's about you. And then, you know, as much as any adult in that early part of my adult formation, you know, you had a profound impact on me and my faith. And, you know, you were one of the guys that kind of, you know, taught me that it was cool to be, you know, spiritually committed to Christ. And I don't know if I've ever thanked you for that, but, you know, all these years later, I look back at, you know, some of the great mentors I've had in my life, and you're at that top of the list for me, and even Karen too, because seeing you guys, like, I'm like, wow, these guys are, this is awesome, man. They're practicing, and it's important, you know, it's important enough that they're going to make this commitment. And so I wanted to take the opportunity to thank you for that. And I don't think I ever really did, but, you know, God put you in my life at that point where I think I needed that the most. And I was blessed to be there with you at Colgate. I appreciate that.
Well, you know, hey, I appreciate that. You know, you saying that, Joe, it means a lot to me. And, you know, obviously, you know, just growing up myself, you know, it was, you know, it really came from my dad, you know, and, you know, we as a family, you know, we went to church, you know, every Sunday. And, you know, as I, you know, left the house and, you know, first went to prep school and then went to college, you know, I found myself, you know, fortunate that, you know, I was, you know, I just, maintained my faith, you know, just, it was something that, you know, I don't know if initially it was out of habit, you know, I just felt, you know, like it was the right thing to do. And, but, you know, as I got older and, you know, fortunately, you know, was fortunate enough that I had, you know, had, you know, practiced strong faith and, you know, made it a point that, you know, as you know, growing up in the coaching profession, you move from place to place.
Sure.
And, you know, it just seemed for me, it was, I always was able to find a church, to find a priest, to find a parish that I would connect with individually. And then as I got married, and had a family, that we would connect with as a family. And, you know, I don't know if you remember, but, you know, it's pretty funny because we were both football coaches at the time. And, you know, we're up at, you know, Hamilton, New York, which is, you know, upstate New York. And, you know, there's a, you know, small little parish there, St. Mary's Parish.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, Father John Madden.
Yeah.
you know, he was our pastor there, and you know, he's a really good example of that. You know, he was someone that you know, I connected with. He was someone that you know, he really enjoyed football. He enjoyed the fact that, you know, that I would come to church every Sunday, and certainly, you know, Karen and my family, and you know, he baptized both my boys, and you know, he just he was someone that was pretty influential in my life. And then, you know, we unfortunately, you know, things didn't work out for us at Colgate, and
have bags will travel,
on,
right?
We moved on there, and you know, I went to Williams College and had a great opportunity to work for Coach Farley, and you know, obviously I was pretty entrenched in my faith at that point, but you know, he was also someone very entrenched in his faith, and you know, Coach Farley was he arguably one of the best Division III coaches in the history of college football.
Sure.
He's in the NCAA College Football Hall of Fame, which not many Division III coaches are in that. So he obviously had the, you know, tremendous success coaching wise. But you know, again, just, you know, every Sunday, you know, seeing him, you know, in the and at the 8 o'clock mass, and you know, we would schedule our, you know, our staff meetings so that, you know, so that we know we could, you know, have that quality family time. And, you know, it's something that, you know, once I became a head coach, you know, obviously I stuck to, and, you know, I just, you know, whether it was, you know, during the thick of, you know, playing games, and, you know what Sundays are like, during the staff meetings and film breakdowns and all those kinds of things, or even into recruiting when, you know, you're on Sunday, you're meeting with 15 recruits who are on campus the night before and their parents, and it's a marathon. You know, I had a firm, you know, line in the sand with my staff. I was like, hey, like, we don't start anything till 10 o'clock. I go to 8 o'clock mass with my family, and then we go out for family breakfast, and, you know, we check in, and then, you know, then I go to the office, and then, and that's, you know, kind of something that just stuck with me all these years.
That's awesome. You know, you talked about routine, right? It's funny, like, it really, you know, St. Pope John Paul used to talk about this a lot when he was Pope. The platform that athletics has to bring people to Christ. But, you know, one of it is, you know, just the routine, right? Like, and I say this to my own kids, like, they're like any relationship, there's ebbs and flows, right? And there's some masses you go and you're just locked in and dialed in, and you feel like you can, you know, you are so, like, Christ is sitting right next to you. You feel so close. And then there's other, not just a specific mass, but maybe periods of your life, right, where you feel like there's other times where you're just kind of going through, and you feel like, man, I can't see the light in amidst all the darkness. But I think that, and like athletics too, some Saturdays you feel like you know. You're on top of the world and you can't miss. And then other Saturdays, you know, it's not your day. But just the, you know, your ability to persevere through those down times, through the dark periods, for the blind spots, through the losses. It's just, I think, like, there's something about the routine of the faith that you know, is attractive, I think, for a lot of athletes. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. And you know, it's, you know, again, you know, feeling very fortunate, you know, having spent, you know, majority of my professional life on college campuses, you know, one of the things that, you know, they also do is, you know, again, I'm intentionally trying to, you know, to connect with, you know, the Catholic groups on the campuses where I work. And, you know, right now at Wesleyan, we have, you know, Father Bill Wallace, who does a great job with our program on campus. And he has the, you know, the Sunday evening at 7 o'clock, he calls it the Last Chance Mass. And, you know, I, you know, Karen and I will at least a couple times a semester, we'll purposely, you know, not go to the morning mass so that, you know, we can go over there onto campus and, you know, have the opportunity to go to one of his masses, and and just be able to celebrate Mass with other Catholic students on the campus, and many of them are athletes, and we had an intern, one of our younger assistant coaches this year, who was converted to Catholicism.
Nice.
and was baptized and the whole nine yards, and was able to attend that for him, and so it's like you say, I think it's important to be engaged, and there's no question that there's times when you're feeling very, very connected, and then there's times where you're less connected. But for me, I feel like that that hour a week that I'm there is an hour that I can kind of really just check out from whatever is troubling me or whatever I'm focused on at that point, and just kind of exhale and take the time to reflect on how fortunate I've been to be in the positions that I've been, and to have the family that I have, and to have the friends that I have.
Well said. I think Matthew Kelly, he talks about it a lot. Like, people say, I don't know how to pray. I don't know how to pray. And then one of the things, like he says, hey, just start out by saying, hey, thank God for all the things you have, and then showing the gratitude, because none of us deserve any of it. Right. And you've got a beautiful wife all these years, faithfully married. How many years have you been married to Karen, Mike?
27.
What a blessing that is, right? I mean, that's awesome. I mean, you got two beautiful kids. Like not, you're like, oh my gosh, man, like I can't believe like I have this charmed life that I have. And I think comparison is the thief of happiness. Sometimes, especially nowadays when everything's so visible, right? And whether it's a promotion at work or a new home or a new car, like we all, it's easy to get caught up in comparing things. But just if you just take the time to say, man, holy mackerel, as I'm listing all the great things in my life, I can't believe I'm living a charmed life, and I don't deserve any of this. And I think just getting that quiet time where you can reflect on it and thank God for the gifts, many of which we're not even aware of, missing tragedies and getting through, crisis and things that you just kind of take for granted sometimes. But gratitude is certainly, a big part of, obviously your faith and certainly my faith. Mike, you talked about Bud, what a great guy he was. I had a chance to, my first job, out of Colgate, I was the defensive coordinator at University of New Haven, and Mike had was influential in me getting that job, and then him and Mike Kelleher were both influential in me getting that job, and then Mike had a place in Connecticut that me and Mo had a chance to live in for the 2 years we were there, and that was such a it was a beautiful property. Your parents had the main house, and then there were a couple, I'm not going to say little, because we lived in a house that, was four or five bedrooms and beautiful home, but just, getting to know your father there and your mother, and just, unbelievable people. And he was just one of those guys that, in his own way, he knew he was a God-fearing man, because just the way he acted and the way he treated other people with respect. And you talked about his influence. You talked about Father Madden's influence. Anybody else come to mind, Mike, in terms of, spiritual influences or mentors that you may have had along the way? You talked, obviously, Coach Farley helped you with that too. But is there anybody else you'd mention there with that, as far as helping you with your faith formation or Catholic identity?
Yeah, there was other priests and Father Sear up at he was our pastor up in Williamstown, and again, just you know, it just seemed like, you know, anytime we made a move, you know, sometimes we went from, you know, one church to another church or whatever, but we were able to find a place to connect with, you know, and to really feel like, you know, we wanted to be fully invested in the community there. I think I don't know if it's divine intervention or what, but, you know, it seemed like, you know, wherever we went, you know, someone was there to welcome us and whether it was me personally or my family as a whole, the other big thing too is having a child with special needs and again, just the way that so many of the pastors, you know, in Luke's life have really just gone out of their way. You know, we're now here and we go to a church in here in Durham, Connecticut, you know, and Father Jan is just incredibly, he'll, you know, we usually sit in the front row, and we started doing that when Luke was young, because it kept his attention. And,
sure.
Now he's 25 years old, and he is, you know, got a strong faith. He really enjoys going to church. He's very engaged when he's in church, and he and Father Jan have such a strong connection. It's really just amazing to see. And for me, things like that, you know, they happen for a reason. And
absolutely.
It's been really, really amazing to watch, Luke and his growth with his faith as well.
That's cool. At the end of the day, like, that's, you know, you talk about legacies, right? Like, I mean, I think, you know, your fatherhood, right? Like, there's nothing, it's hard to describe the magnitude of that blessing. But, you know, when we leave this earth, I mean, you know, what type of men or, you know, kids we're leaving behind in your situation, you know, you got two beautiful sons, I got two sons and a daughter, like that's really our legacy, showing them what, you know, what faith looks like, what, you know, if they decide to have children, what parenthood looks like and fatherhood looks like. And at the end of the day, there's no greater responsibility than that as a father. Mike, I was at a mass about 2.5 months ago. And the priest in his homily was talking about, you know, being, you know, some people say we're entering the post-Christian era. And it kind of, when he said that, I was like, holy mackerel, like, you know, is that what we've evolved to? And then, you know, it scared me a little bit. And then, as you look at people that are falling away from organized religion, particularly, you know, Catholic faith and Christianity, and, you know, people are identifying as, either agnostic or atheist, you know, altogether. And, you know, and there you are, right? You're at one of, you know, the premier academic schools in the country. And, there's, like all, you know, most colleges and like all really, really reputable academic schools, sometimes it's hard to be faith-filled, you know, working on a college campus where, you know, whether it's, you know, private school, state school, Catholic, non-sectarian, like there's almost like a de-emphasized approach to any organized religion. Do you have a hard time kind of navigating those waters with, you know, academia, which is generally more liberal than even society, you know, and then in an academic, you know, arena, you know, kind of having conservative Christian values? Is there challenges that come with that, Mike?
Yeah, I think there are. I can remember specifically, you know, when I was, you know, a younger coach starting out, you know, I was, I was, um, you know, I don't want to say secretive, but I
in the closet. Never,
what's that?
In the closet. I've been there. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I just didn't, you know, I was very close to the vest and, you know, didn't share my spiritual opinions with anyone in the workplace. And it was kind of like a separate deal for me. And you know, again, as I became, you know, older and, you know, more confident and, you know, my faith grew stronger, you know, that's when I, like I mentioned earlier, you know, found myself, you know, really, you know, trying to, you know, to not influence, but just reinforce to others on our campus that, you know, that religion was important to me, you know, and like I said, you know, the, you know, going to the Last Chance Mass, you know, I mean, again, you know, I, you know, one of the things is, you know, for me is, you know, when you make the transition from, you know, from coach, head coach to athletic director, you know, instead of, like you mentioned earlier, instead of being, you know, in charge of one sport, you know, now you're in charge of 30 sports and you know, I remember that in those first couple of years, you know, I would come to a game, go to a field hockey game, you know, a women's lacrosse game, you know, a rowing race. You know, like you said, we have 30 varsity sports, so we, you know, just about any sport you can name, we have. And so, you know, but I, you know, I really made an effort, a concentrated effort, to go around and to you know, show my presence and support for our student athletes. And I can remember, you know, just saying to someone, yeah, you know, I want to go and, you know, just let our kids know. I said, they don't even know I'm there, and, you know, those kinds of things. And you know, coaches came to me and parents came to me, and even my wife, Karen, said to me, she's like, what? She's like, every single person knows you're there.
Sure.
And you know, and the kids know it, the parents know it, the alumni know it, and, you know, it makes a difference. And, you know, it, you know, I kind of feel the same way about, you know, about my faith. And, you know, like, I'm not someone that's going to go around and preach to others or those kinds of things. But, you know, I do feel that, you know, like I said, you know, going to, you know, the Last Chance Mass on campus and you know, letting our student athletes on the campus, our Catholic student athletes on the campus, know that you know, my faith is important to me, and that, you know, I support them, and you know, hopefully, you know, like you mentioned, that you know, that I can be that role model in their life, you know, when they're sometimes struggling about it, you know, the million other things they have to do that week. Do they have time to go to church? And you know, seeing me at that Mass, if that reinforces, you know, their faith to them in some small way, then you know, I think that's a you know, a huge thing for me. So you know, I'm definitely aware of it. Like you say, there's no question there's challenges with it. You know, again, it's to me, it's, you know, I've just always been, you know, more like a lead from example type of person.
No doubt.
You know, whether that's, you know, as an athlete, or, you know, as a coach, or you know, as now as an administrator, is you know, I just believe, like, you know, it's there's no job that's too small. And, you know, if you're not willing to roll up your sleeves and get in there and lead by example, then you know, it's going to be you're going to be less effective as a leader.
That's pretty awesome. And there's no question that those 18 to 22 year old men and women that see you at Mass with your wife, you know, that's you don't underestimate how influential that is, because that's I can speak from experience, that's a profound impact. Folks, we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be back for the second half hour of Mike Whalen, athletic director at Wesleyan University. Stay tuned for these messages.
My name is Mario D'Adamo, and I have been a faithful listener to In His Sign Radio Ministry since 1990, and to Kathleen McCarthy as principal host since 2007. Hearing the witness of Kathleen and her guests has contributed greatly to my spiritual growth. They have educated me about the tenets of my Catholic faith by presenting lay and religious leaders discuss topics that help listeners create an informed Catholic conscience. I always encourage people who are in need of prayer and companionship to listen, call in, and become part of our radio listener family by joining thousands of other people praying for your intentions. I personally can attest to the power of the prayers from the ministry. Kathleen often reminds her listeners that you are never alone because the Lord is always with us. Through this Catholic radio and internet apostolate, the Lord is indeed with us in a very tangible way. Please share the good news as Kathleen takes a leap of faith and expanding to a two-hour program to reach many more people who need to experience the love of God. Thank you.
My friends, it is you who have stood lockstep with us in underpinning our apostolate by your powerful prayers and sacrificial financial giving. We have no doubt that you surely are the angels the Lord said He would send to us, and we are forever grateful. These are urgent times, and we need to proclaim the truth of God's Word, which alone can set us free. And we need to bring the Lord's healing power, love, and mercy out to a world that is in such desperate need. As your local Catholic radio apostolate, we are humbled and mightily blessed to have your loyal support. For our new listeners who would be interested in joining us, we can be reached at 610-527-2906 or on the web at inhissign.com.
Folks, welcome back to Souls on Fire. I'm your host, Joe Traynor, along with Athletic Director at Wesleyan University, Mike Whalen. Mike, do you miss coaching?
Yeah, I do. I definitely do. I miss it. I miss it more on game day. because you know, Joe, I never called a play that didn't work.
So, especially as an AD, right?
No question. The first couple of years was really hard. In fact, I couldn't. You know, I was having trouble even then. I couldn't find a place to stand. I couldn't be on the sideline. I couldn't be in the stands. And so I ended up, getting up into the press box and actually doing the play-by-play with our webcast.
Oh, nice.
And that kept me engaged in the game, but also allowed me to kind of keep my mind off of not coaching.
Sure.
Once the crew of players that I recruited had graduated, you know, then I felt a little bit more removed, and it kind of eased my pain from missing coaching. But in the first 3 years, originally the plan was me to come and turn the football program around, and which, you know, we thought would be a 5-year deal. After year four, John Bittescombe, who was the AD before me and my college wrestling coach, he would retire after year four. And then year five, I would do both jobs. I would be the AD and the head football coach for year five.
Okay.
And then after year five, I would step down and my defensive coordinator, Dan DeCenzo, would take over as head coach. And unfortunately, that was a good plan, but Coach Bittescombe decided to retire 2 years earlier. So I ended up doing both jobs, the AD and the head football coach, for 3 years.
Gotcha. And that had to be hard.
That was a lot.
Absolutely. Well, you know what's cool? That last 2 years, though, you were 7-1, right? Back-to-back 7-1 years, right?
Yeah, yeah. We really, turned it around, and it was a lot of fun. It's, as you know, Joe, it's never easy to go in and change a culture, but we had a really good staff, and I was blessed that I had a really great relationship with our administration. And I always say this stuff isn't rocket science.
Sure.
It's difficult as long as everyone is on the same page and communicates effectively together. And we've been able to make a seamless transition from myself to Dan, and he's done a fantastic job.
Yes, he has.
Even taking the programs to further heights. So, I'm not going to lie, because there were plenty of times when, as you alluded to in my introduction, Williams was a football, the program was just phenomenal. And, Coach Farley had done an incredible job building that program. And, I felt like, when I was fortunate enough to become the head coach there, I was kind of like just maintaining what he built.
Sure.
And, when the opportunity at Wesleyan presented itself, that was one of the things that attracted me. As much as, you mentioned, it being my alma mater and having the opportunity to go home and those kinds of things, those were important. But, it was what was really important to me was, was that Wesleyan was really, ready to pursue athletic excellence. They'd always been, in the market for academic excellence.
Sure.
But for the first time, in my association of over 30 years with the school, they were ready to really, pursue excellence athletically. And that was something that appealed to me. And, honestly, I felt like if I could go to Wesleyan and turn it into a winner, it would give me the opportunity to put my mark on the program, much like Coach Farley put his mark on the Williams program. And but that's easier said than done. And
no doubt,
those first couple years were tough. And I remember waking up in the middle of the night in a full sweat, saying, "What did I do? Like, why did I ever leave Williams?" You have that self doubt, and you have that. You question yourself, and there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that my faith in God and my belief was something that gave me the strength and determination to reach my goal.
That's awesome. I tell my own kids, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Finish what you're saying.
No, and just to reach the goals of the program.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. Like, I tell my own children, like, that, my faith, it gets you, it's gotten me through the darkest periods of my life, personally and professionally, and having that compass there, that moral compass to kind of just stay the course and trust God unconditionally, because you're going to get, you'll lose a job, you'll lose a loved one, you'll relocate, you may have, there's death, there's divorce, all the things that happen in life. But, I can't imagine having endured any of the challenges that I've endured, and I've lived a charm life, but I can't imagine having endured any of those challenges without my faith, I don't see how I would have been able to get through that. But I did want to, as you're recapping your head, your head coaching career, what a career it was. I mean, you're 38-10, replacing the legend, which, you could argue is, sustaining something that's already been built, has its own like crazy challenge, anxious challenges, right? And then kind of, 26-14 at Wesleyan, kind of resurrecting them from the dead and kind of leaving on back-to-back 7-1 championships, winning the Little Three title in 2013 for the first time in 43 years. It's kind of cool that, in both of your head coaching stints, you had dramatically different experiences. One where you were charged with replacing a Hall of Famer and sustaining that level of excellence. And then at the alma mater, kind of, you know, bringing a rebirth to a program that had been dormant for a long time. And then having, you know, even though your percentage may have been better at Wesleyan, you would argue, and excuse me, at Williams, you would argue, probably there's a big party that says, you know, the pride you take, and there's nothing like taking over a downtrodden program and having success and being a part of that program. There's just really nothing like it, you know?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Joe. There's no question about that. And, you know, for your listeners out there that, you know, Wesleyan's in the NESCAC, New England Small College Athletic Conference, and you know, we compete with Williams, we compete with Amherst, we compete with
some of the top
Trinity,
schools in the country,
Middlebury,
absolutely.
Yeah, the top academic schools, yeah, and but what's interesting is you know, you mentioned the Little Three, and you know, when I first got back to Wesleyan, you know, no one ever talked about it, and you know, no one ever talked about it because, you know, no teams at Wesleyan won the Little Three. And, you know, that's the first thing I did when I got there was, you know, I started talking about it. And, you know, you know, I'm a Red Sox fan. I'm a lifelong Red Sox fan. It was, and it's closest thing I can, you know, compare it to was, you know, the drought that the Red Sox had before they won the World Series, you know. And
well,
here we were. It's a three-team league. You know, it's a league within a league, Little Three. It's modeled after the, you know, the Ivy League, the Big Three, Harvard, Yale, and Princeton. And here we are with, you know, Williams, Amherst, and Wesleyan. And you know, it's been, you know, over 40 years since they've won a Little Three championship.
Wow.
And, you know, I remember, you know, my first, you know, interview when I came back to Wesleyan, and you know, someone said to me, one of the local reporters said to me, he said, "Hey, Mike," he said, "you know, do you think you're going to be able to win a Little Three?" I said, "Well, before I accepted this job, I called a close friend who's a mathematician from MIT, and I said, "Hey, you know, what are the odds that you know, you know, one team cannot win a three-team championship for more than 40 years?" It's almost mathematically impossible for that to happen. So I felt like the odds were in my favor.
and your coaching prowess was backing that up, no doubt. I tell you, you know what? When I look back at, you know, coaching for 30 years, I don't miss the games. I don't think I ever really enjoyed the games as much as I wish I did. But I tell you what, brother, I miss the locker room. I miss the, you know, the relationships, and you know, coming off of this period in America. I had a guest on a couple weeks ago who was a coach, and you wish everybody in America had a chance to be in a football locker room, you know, black, white, you know, Christian, Jew, Muslim, you know, Buddhist, Catholic, you know, the whole gamut of people, and then to have that unifying goal. And the brotherhood that follows that when you have success, it's just, I really do. I wish everybody, I think we could, all of America could learn about race relations from the composition of a football program, you know?
I totally agree, Joe. There's no question about it. And, you know, I think, you know, it's a bit, you know, a bit of a cliche when you say, you know, how many life lessons you learn and you know, from playing the game of football. And but, you know, it really does, you know, it teaches you so much. And, you know, you take away what you take away from the game, you know, stays with you and helps you in so many other areas of your life. And, you know, I think it draws a great parallel with your faith. You know,
there's
you know, because I feel the same way about my faith. Like it, there's so many things that I've learned in my life through my faith. And, you know, there's so many things that, my faith has helped me overcome, you know, throughout my, my youth and then becoming an adult and then becoming, you know, up to where I am now, which is, you know, almost ready to collect Social Security. So
you're not done yet.
You know, it's just amazing to me, you know, the parallels.
I agree. And even things like learning to be a good teammate, right? Like, good teammates become employable adults. You know, it's like you just wish, like, hey, like being able to support the mission of the team when your own agenda is not being met, and you're going to go out into the real world, and there's going to be times where your own agenda is not going to be met. You don't get the promotion. You don't have the corner office. You have to relocate. Like, there's just so many times. And then, to your point, like the lessons, it's hard to explain the benefit to somebody that hasn't had the opportunity to participate in that. But I just really believe, and particularly I think with the sport of football, because the rosters are so big, right? It's, personality management. I'm not taking anything away from basketball or baseball or some smaller roster numbers, but when you have 80 kids, 90 kids, close to 100 kids from all walks of life, right? It's just, there's going to be friction. There's going to be adversity. There's going to be challenges. There's going to be rubs, and your ability to kind of stay the course, communicate those rubs, talk them, come to some type of conclusions, all the while we're putting the team first. It's a special experience. There's no question about that, Mike. One of the things that, and I want to get your slant. Like, one of the things that I wrestle with, and I've talked about it with a number of guests before, but the gift of faith, right? Like, I look at you, and there was your father, making sure everybody, the faith was formed in the Whalen household growing up. There's no question about that, but the giftedness of faith. I just feel like I'm one of seven kids. There's, I think there's two of us, maybe three of us that practice the faith. And I feel like amidst all my shortcomings and sinfulness, my faith has never wavered, And I wonder about that a lot, because why was I in a family where the parents were the same and the mass routine was the same and all that, why it stuck with me. And then you have close friends that, fallen away Catholics or may not even identify as Catholic anymore. But like, I feel like the selectivity of the gift of faith is something I still try and reconcile, because I certainly don't deserve it. But I have it, and like much like any other gift that I was given. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I think, I don't know why, I think every practicing, or person of faith has friendships and has people, in their lives that don't practice their faith. And, two of my closest college friends, who I'm still close with today, they grew up practicing Catholics and, went to Catholic school, all the way through high school, graduated. When we went to Wesleyan, I would say of the three of us, I probably was the strongest practicing Catholic during our 4 years, but they both would come with me, off and on. And, but then, once post college, they obviously went in different directions, and today, neither one of them is practicing. Mm. We've been places, whether we're traveling to play golf somewhere, or whether we're, doing a reunion somewhere, or, whatever. And, I have an app on my phone, and, if I'm somewhere and it's Sunday, I'm going to be doing pretty much everything I can to make sure that I'm catching Mass somewhere. And I really enjoy doing it. I really enjoy going to new churches and meeting new people and, hearing others, express their faith. And that's something that's always, positively impacted me. And, you know, there's been other times when, you know, now especially as we get older, you know, we'll be vacationing with another couple and you know, on Sunday, Karen and I, we make no bones about it. We're saying, sure, hey, we're gonna catch, you know, 8:30 mass or whatever we're gonna do. And, you know, I always say, hey, you know, you're welcome to come. And if not, you know, we could meet at the restaurant and go to breakfast after, and, you know, those kinds of things. And, you know, when you know, there's been two couples in particular that we have kind of vacationed with that I knew were both practicing Catholics. And, you know, they actually, you know, started going to church after they went to the church with us that one time. They kind of got back into it. You know, they'd gotten away from it.
That's awesome.
And, you know, they both kind of, you know, went out of their way to say, hey, you know, when we were in Long Beach Island, New Jersey, and, you know, you guys took us to church that day, you know, we you know, kind of got back from that weekend and, you know, talked as a couple and said, you know, we really should be, you know, getting back into our faith. And
that's awesome.
You know, to know that you played a small role in that, you know, it's pretty impactful.
Absolutely. Success begets more success. And then you feel like you're taking your faith up to another level too, which is awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. I'd be remiss, Mike, if I didn't, you know, obviously, you know, you have a special relationship with Coach Belichick. Let the audience know about that a little bit. Obviously, he's an alum, right? Played lacrosse and at Wesleyan.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is, you know, so as we talked about, I was at Williams for 15 years, and, you know, Jonathan Kraft, you know, son of Robert Kraft.
Sure.
And, he is a Williams grad. And so I would, you know, Jonathan was kind enough to invite me up to, you know, to either go to practice or go to games or whatever. And, you know, I'd had an opportunity to, you know, to meet Bill. And, you know, he, you know, when I was at Williams, he was a bit standoffish. And, you know, I remember one time when it was homecoming at Wesleyan, and I was still at Williams at the time. You know, we came down to Wesleyan, and everyone had said he was going to be there because it was an off weekend, and he was there. And you know, we laid it on Wesleyan pretty good. And after the game, I'm feeling pretty good about myself, and you know, kind of walking across the field, and I see him walking across the field, and I know we're gonna you know, intercept, and I'm like, oh, you know, I said, Coach is going to say hi, you know, and this and that, and. And, you know, I kind of looked up and I said, hey, Coach, how's it going? And he didn't even grunt. He didn't even look at me. He just kept walking. And I was like, man, weird, you know. And so then fast forward to, you know, I'm in the process of, you know, I've been offered the job at Wesleyan. It was a really difficult decision. You know, I mean, you know, we had, you know, like I said, spent 15 years up at Williams. And you know, it was, you know, my wife Karen was assistant AD, and we had a really good family situation there, and just built a house, and you know, just didn't really think that I would ever leave there. And you know, this opportunity presented itself, and there was three or four sleepless nights that week where I didn't sleep very well because I was trying to make this decision, you know, I remember when I finally made it, you know, I think it was like a Thursday night, and I just went to bed like at 6 o'clock, and you know, Karen came in, it was like, I don't know, 8:30, 9 o'clock, and I was out, and the phone rang, and the caller ID, I heard Karen say, it's Bill Belichick, do you want to take it? I said, no, let the machine take it, and I rolled over.
Wow.
And went back to sleep.
That's impressive.
And I woke up the next morning, and I said to Karen, I said, was I dreaming, or did Bill Belichick call? She goes, oh, no, he called. I said, did he leave a message? She goes, oh, yeah, he left a message. And the message went something like this. It went, hey, Mike, Bill Belichick, head coach of the New England Patriots. Yes, Coach, I know who you are. Okay, like, you don't have to say
sure,
head coach of the New England Patriots. I'm very aware who you are. And he says, just calling to congratulate you on coming back home and leaving the dark side.
That's awesome.
And he said, anything you need from me, anything I can do to help you in your journey at Westland, he said, you call me anytime. And from that day on, we've had an incredible friendship, and he's been so supportive of what we've been doing here. And you know, honestly, I mean, he's proud now to be a Westland alum and what we're doing. And he's also, like you mentioned, he played football here. You know, was kind of a role player, but his sport was lacrosse.
Sure.
As a lot of people know, and he was captain and a really, really good player, and very cerebral player. And Coach Terry Jackson, who was his coach back then, you know, would say that, you know, even then, you know, Coach Belichick would be designing lacrosse plays, and, you know, during timeouts, he would be the one that would be, you know, talking the most, and, you know, those kinds of things. And so it was, you know, clear at an early age that, you know, he had a special mind. And, you know, the thing that I would say about him that I think is his whole persona, what he does on TV and the interviews and all those kinds of things, like, he's nothing like that in person. And
I was going to ask, he's got a
generous and warm and great friend that, you know, it's amazing. It's amazing. And Westland is fortunate to have him as such a great and loyal alum.
That's awesome. Quickly, before we get out of here, Mike, you know, you have our faith, right, that we're both very proud of and true to, you know, and then you have, you know, in America here, you have, like, you know, you have really the liberal version of Catholicism and the conservative version, you know, issues of life, you know, gender identification, immigration, you know, whatever the five or six big ticket things are. Do you see us come rectifying and unifying, or eventually there's going to lead to a break? What are your thoughts quickly?
You know, obviously, you know, I mean, I, you know, again, it's those are all very, very complicated issues. I think from my perspective, you know, I hope that the church is able to stay together and to resolve issues and work through it. But, you know, there's no questions that those are big challenges, and time will tell. I'm someone that, again, that, you know, I'm not, as you know, Joe, I'm not afraid to speak my mind.
No doubt.
I feel like, you know, that I've been raised a certain way and that, you know, I have certain beliefs and I'm going to stick by them, and I'm going to be true to myself. And I think that's the piece of advice that I give people all the time is, you know, if you're true to yourself, then, and you can look the man in the mirror, then you're doing the right thing.
Absolutely. Brother, this was awesome, Mike. I appreciate your time. Continued success, and best to Karen and the family, brother. Love you, man.
Thanks, Joe. Really appreciate it. And all the best to you and Mo, and we'll talk soon.
All right, buddy. Love you, man. Have a great week. Folks, thanks again for tuning in. Have a great week.